Good morning. Okay, let me get my bearings. Not a thing to disclose. I have nothing to tell you in this regard. Well, I'm very pleased to be here, and particularly at this conference, because we're all about building partnerships and identifying our key stakeholders, and I think the themes of the conference very much resonate with us at the Council of Large Public Housing Authorities, and I guess I have one thing to disclose. Ismael Guerrero is on my board of directors and an excellent housing authority director. But the whole notion of healthography and where you live matters. For us, we say housing matters. We think housing really is, well, let me turn it around, that housing really is the new healthcare delivery system, and I think the examples that I'm going to show really highlight that. The themes, I was at the Surgeon General's session, which was very inspiring coming from the housing field, but also I could commiserate that we all have a lot of politics to deal with and funding issues, but the themes of education, prevention, the call to fully fund the social determinants of health, that is, from my advocacy perspective, is absolutely essential as we see really in real dollars our affordable housing resources from the federal government actually declining. We're very focused on the integration of services in the healthcare world. It's Medicaid and Medicare integration, but for us, it's integrating across all systems. So I want to begin with this quote from Gertrude Stein, because this is how we should think about serving seniors. We are always the same age inside, and we think about serving seniors. We should keep that in mind. So a little bit about housing authorities, and thank you, Ruth, for the introduction, so I'll march quickly through this. So these are local and state organizations that primarily operate the public housing and Section 8 housing choice voucher, and I would just add that there are actually 4,000 housing authorities, maybe too many, that it also includes serving the voucher program, which serves about 2 million households. Housing authorities range in size from tiny, tiny to colossal, and glad to have New York City in the room. They serve close to 300,000 households. I don't know, a big city in any other environment. So the Council of Large Public Housing Authorities is a membership organization. We represent about 70 of the largest housing authorities in the country. Our membership alone serves about 40% of the public housing in the country and about 25% of the Section 8 housing choice vouchers. So we're primarily urban and large and metropolitan. This is what we do. Sometimes successfully, sometimes we wish more successfully. Advocate for adequate funding for affordable housing. Develop and advocate for policies to improve the delivery of affordable housing. And I think we should now amend that to say affordable housing and important other kinds of community services. Our focus now for the last 2 years has been on what we call systems alignment, which is building partnerships between the affordable housing field and other sectors to improve the outcomes for residents. And just one example of that, we're working with the Gates Foundation to build partnerships between school districts and housing authorities on improving educational outcomes. And so we're looking for willing partners in the public health and health fields to try to build those strategic alliances, both on the local level, but also on the policy level. So just to say it a little differently than Ruth did, so we have about 800,000 households served through public housing and the Housing Choice Voucher Program that have heads or spouses that are over 62 years of age. That's a lot of folks. And almost 10% have a head or spouse age 85 or older. So this is an exploding demographic for us in terms of aging in place, and that's why some of these strategies that we have are increasingly more important. So we have almost half of those households have a head or spouse age 62 and disabled. So we've got a lot of complicated and layered kinds of delivery systems going on and needs. And then I also want to address the non-elderly disabled, almost as many in public housing and the housing choice voucher, which we believe are likely to stay in place for the most part. So we are probably going to be serving these households as seniors as well, and so our strategies really need to be long-term and forward-thinking in terms of building systems that make sense. So I want to talk about a recent study whose results may seem very intuitive to you. This is the first study that has done data matching between HUD data and Medicare and Medicaid data. So what it found was that 70% of HUD-assisted Medicare beneficiaries, and when I say HUD-assisted, I said that includes all the 5 million units that are federally funded assisted. About a little over 2 million units are subsidized but owned and operated by private owners and private nonprofit organizations. That is compared to 13% of unassisted Medicare beneficiaries, so unassisted, those who are not receiving any type of housing assistance. So this will not be surprising. Folks who are living in assisted housing are frailer, sicker, older, poorer. They have a prevalence of, they are more likely to have the prevalence of 8 of 9 chronic conditions, significantly higher among HUD-assisted households. And 55% of HUD-assisted dual eligibles had 5 or more chronic conditions versus 43%. The one chronic condition that was not significantly higher was Alzheimer's. So we've been asked by various folks, if you're already living in HUD-assisted housing, shouldn't your health be better and not worse than those in unassisted? And while the next stages of this study, which is a multi-year study, will be looking at the kinds of services that are being provided and looking more deeply at the type of housing, my personal theory is that people come into the system, they are very, very low income households, they're coming into the system in much poorer health as a result of starting with poorer health, and these conditions do not go away. Many of them had very poor access to healthcare systems and other kinds of preventative care, and we're seeing this played out in housing. So, you know, let me go back. I think I've... sorry. Okay, so in terms of the use of services, we're seeing in HUD-assisted dual eligibles higher physician visits, home health visits, personal care, and medical equipment services. All in all, one can clearly say without qualification, they're using more services. Their payment per month per person is considerably higher than those who are not assisted. The challenge here is to look at how we take to integrate the Medicare and Medicaid services. This is not my field of expertise, so you'll forgive me my not talking techno to you. But some Medicare pays for some things, Medicaid pays for other things. They pay through different providers, and I think the integration of these services is a huge, huge challenge. As you see in assisted households, payment is the costs are about $2,400 versus about $2,000, and we don't like to talk about cost savings because we don't want those dollars to go back into the treasury. We talk about reinvesting these dollars to provide more efficient and effective health care, not sick care, as I heard yesterday. So what are CLEPA members doing? Quite an array of opportunities. I start with Laffin Park in Milwaukee. It started in 1996, and their mission was really very outside of the very siloed, highly, highly regulated public housing system to think about a continuing care retirement community for low-income households. And so for the households we serve, they do not have the options that higher-income folks have, which is a whole continuum of independent living, assisted living, skilled nursing home, in terms of the subsidized, if you're lucky enough to get into a subsidized housing unit, it's either independent care or nursing home. And so I think we've all come to agree that we need more options for low-income households, and this is really what housing authorities are experimenting with. So Lapham Park, and I was honored to be there many years ago when they opened it up, so the anecdote that struck me was, before these services were in place, there were about 50 social workers marching into that building every month, seeing different households providing a different array of services. Nothing was coordinated. No one talked to each other. It was very individualized and not integrated care. And this was a motivation both for the state insurer and the housing authority to think about how they could better deliver services. The other aspect of that is most residents felt that they were not getting the services that they actually needed and wanted. So as they look over time at Lapham Park, their estimate is they're saving $1.4 million a year in Medicaid nursing home costs. They have about a 3% turnover rate in their public housing seniors, which is very low. Most people do not get institutionalized but stay with these set of services till the end of life. Very important, it sustains a sense of community. This is a community that had been redeveloped but was an historic African-American community, and when they redesigned the building, the lower floors were really supposed to be the neighborhood. There were large murals talking about the history of it. There was a barbershop and a beauty salon. But when we talk about social isolation and the social determinants of health, this is a critical factor in keeping seniors in the building and living independently, is their sense of connection and sense of community. We have a broad array of initiatives across the country. The Atlanta Housing Authority, their Aging Well initiative is focused on delivering services, social and community services, nutrition programs, and integrating their seniors into the larger community. The Chicago Housing Authority has a partnership with the Shed Aquarium to bring households out on field trips and through these mechanisms to stay in touch with seniors and identify a broader needs. The Charlotte Housing Authority has, again, a broad array of services, include nutrition, nurse visits, other kinds of supportive services. They've recently surveyed their households, and 78% of their senior households say they would be less active with the services. And happy to provide more in-depth information about any of these or contact information directly with housing authorities, and we do have online on our website a couple of publications that deal specifically with profiles of all of these programs. The St. Paul Housing Authority uses the Congregate Housing Services Program, and this is an interesting program. It began in 1978, very successful, reduced hospitalizations and high utilization of health care services. In 1995, for political purposes, it was decided that HUD should not be funding services anymore, and we know that was a very bad decision. And so from 1995 on, the housing authorities that had received grants continued to get funded, but no one was added to the program. And and this involves housekeeping services as well, which is a really critical component of supportive services, our housing authorities tell us. It is an opportunity to go into a unit to see the condition of the unit. It is an opportunity to understand kind of the nutritional environment and the social environment, and it prevents the spread of germs and some really basic kind of preventative healthcare services. The average cost of up to two meals a day and two housekeeping sessions is about $8,000 a year versus a nursing home stay, which is about $70,000 a year. So in Barry's comment about data, this Evaluation component is absolutely essential to look about how we provide some services up front in terms of what our savings and ability to reinvest these resources to provide these basic supportive services. Oklahoma City has an adult day service center, nursing services, computer lab, food bank, public library branch, and I think a lot of these aspects connect to social determinants of health. So when we think about services, and remember Gertrude Stein, what we're looking for in terms of connection, intellectual stimulation, and engagement are things that we have to build into how we're serving our seniors. They have a partnership with a federally qualified health center, as many housing authorities do, Variety Care, and they are now looking at implementing the PACE program, which allows a capitated payment so that services can be individualized to the household rather than fit into a pay-for-service model. And they're finding that this has been we've seen that in other places, including including Milwaukee, that really provides for a higher standard and more responsive standard of care for seniors. Not all states have PACE programs. So I don't have to talk about Home Forward in Portland because there's someone in the audience that's actually doing it, right? I said I don't have to talk about this because there's someone from Portland who is engaged in this housing with services model. Is that?
Oh, I know what you're saying. No, I'm from Vermont.
Oh, I'm sorry. You said Portland.
We're not helping report that you're talking about our programs there as well. We're from Vermont, but I do know what you're saying.
Okay, so you're with the SASH. So you're involved in SASH. Okay. Well, SASH, I will just give. It's not on a slide, but a really enormously promising. Endeavor where through their Medicare reform are now providing service dollars directly to housing authorities to provide a package of supportive services and care. So Home Forward, again, another very promising initiative, housing with services pilot in senior buildings owned by Cedars-Sinai Park, and Home Forward is formerly known as the Prince, no, formerly known as the Housing Authority of Portland, Oregon. So this is part of Oregon's demonstration to integrate care for dual eligible individuals and to have a more effective way of integrating. Did you?
I'm actually not from Portland, but I will say something about this. We just had the Network for Public Health a long time ago, and I was on a session on Pat Curran, who's the CEO of Care Oregon, was there talking about how they work with managed care organizations to integrate into the Remember from Us team.
So Home Forward is also thinking forward, as we can see, in terms of their partnerships, and I think they've got also a collaborative political environment where people think that they should be talking to each other and being engaged. That's so something all we have to work on locally. So thank you for mentioning that. Care Oregon is a key player in this, and seeing that there may be value in looking at the supportive services. I think they're going through an evolution to think about how whether. They started with a capitated payment. They're now looking at more of a navigator service. So I think they're going through some changes in evolution. But for us, this is a model we think has great promise and should be replicated across the country, particularly when we look at the level of dual eligibles in HUD-assisted housing. Senior campuses is another strategy that housing authorities are engaging in. This is primarily generated through redevelopment strategies, through the HOPE 6 program that was developed to revitalize severely distressed public housing communities, and what has evolved to Choice Neighborhoods, which is a more neighborhood redevelopment focus. Just to tell you how important money is, we started off with $500 million a year for almost 10 years on Hope 6. The Choice Neighborhoods now is about $100 million, which means about two grants a year. So the opportunities for large redevelopment strategies without local and state funding is more limited, but we're seeing really interesting models coming out. And the senior campus notion is to build more options for low-income seniors in terms of housing types. So beginning with independent care, independent living with supportive services, and a new model developing, affordable assisted living. That's much more complicated. It requires licensing, and it's very expensive. The District of Columbia Housing Authority just did a 12-unit deal, and the director there said it was more brain damage doing 12 units than doing 450 units on a Hope 6 redevelopment. So one of our goals is to make this simpler and streamlined and to build more options for seniors. The Seattle Housing Authority and their new Holly Village redevelopment is also integrating seniors, looking at talk about health impact studies, flat land, access to supermarkets, libraries, and again building a continuum of care, if you will, in terms of housing types. Cambridge Housing Authority, Massachusetts, is also an interesting example. That includes Neville Place, includes assisted, affordable assisted living, which means subsidized assisted living and market rate assisted living, and they also have a memory care, high nursing level skilled facility for memory care and Alzheimer's patients. So I would say the Minneapolis Housing Authority also has a memory loss housing, which is a much higher level of care. So this is a very interesting model that we should be thinking about just because of the demographics. So the Housing Authority of Kansas City found in their county there were about 10,000 households headed by grandparents that were raising children. And they have developed a housing specifically for these households. Nationally, there are about 2.5 million households headed by grandparents, and that is a growing number. So they needs at a dual generational at both ages, and so this is a very interesting, promising example. And thank you very much, and very interested in your questions.